Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today, I'm calling on the Washington Secretary of State to investigate efforts to stop signature gathering on Referendum 101. I'm dead serious. Things have gotten too far. There was an event over the weekend where I believe that counter-protesters to individuals trying to collect signatures for that referendum violated state law. We'll dive into that. Plus, Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal under fire for anti-Semitic comments that she made at an event. Ori Hoffman, a host at KVI, is going to join us. Also, ballots in hand. You should have your ballots by now. Mine came in the mail over the weekend. If you're a voter in the city of Seattle, there are some city council candidates trying to rewrite history when it comes to their position on police defunding. And we're not going to let them, okay? We're not going to let them. Also, there's a push to make the long-term care tax optional. It is something that I think that crosses party lines. And so Senate Minority Leader John Braun is going to join us coming up in a few minutes. But first, if you have not become an Undivided subscriber already, please do so. Help us support this mission and this movement to give common sense a comeback. It's only $5 a month. Think of all the things you spend $5 on. Bringing sanity back to the state of Washington sure ought to be one of them. Okay, let's dive into this issue of what I really believe is voter intimidation. And here's why I'm so fired up about this today. You know, we heard for years and over about democracy's in peril, democracy's in peril. And it came after the January 6th riot at the Capitol. And I do believe that that was a very serious event in our nation's history. But for Democrats in Washington state, I truly believe that they have not only taken steps to, silence voters and silence dissent, but I think they are going too far and actually violating the law when it comes to trying to prevent initiatives and referendums from being successful when those initiatives and referendums are something they don't agree with politically. So you guys will recall, I mean, we've been collecting signatures for Referendum 101, which would send Senate Bill 5599 to voters, which has to do, of course, with parental rights, in my opinion. So I had multiple events across Western Washington. One of them was in the city of Lacey, and counter-protesters showed up. So we're inside this coffee shop in Lacey collecting signatures for Referendum 101, and I would say about 50 people showed up outside, basically painting me and anyone inside as anti-transgender. For the most part, though, they were peaceful, although they had their little umbrellas, as they often do, and were trying to block anyone who was trying to record, including our friend Jonathan Cho. And at the time, I'm like, look, you know, I heard from a few people who came in and expressed that it was intimidating to them to kind of cross the line of protesters to come in and sign the referendum, but they did it anyway. And so I wasn't too worried about it. I don't know if there was anyone who would have come into the coffee shop to sign if not for the protesters. But there was an event over the weekend. And remember, we're kind of in the final stretch now with Referendum 101. If you have the forms, they should be in the mail. But there have been some volunteers out trying to collect last-minute signatures. And there was an event in Lakewood that a group of volunteers was at to collect signatures for Referendum 101. And they were met by counter-protesters who I really believe crossed the line, violated state law in intimidating individuals who may have wanted to come in and sign Referendum 101. Our friend Jonathan Cho spoke to one of the volunteers who described from her perspective what happened.
A couple women showed up with signs.
It's okay. I'm more of a
saying that we are Nazis and that we are fascists. And then they started blowing a blowhorn every time that someone was coming up to our booth. We were trying to talk to people. They would yell over us. Everyone who approached our booth felt intimidated. And I felt uncomfortable yelling out to anyone who was walking by because they were already being yelled at by these protesters.
Yeah. So this was at Lakewood Summerfest. And, you know, I'm going to read the state law in a moment, but just practically speaking, before I actually read the law that's on the books, if you are coming to maybe consider signing a referendum and you see people hanging around that are holding up signs calling you a Nazi or a fascist, if you see members of the Black Panther Party, they are holding up signs, would you be willing to still walk up and sign that referendum anyway. I tend to think there's a lot of people who would not. A lot of reasonable people who support referendum 101, but who would be scared and intimidated by the scene that was playing out there in Lakewood. Now, in watching the video from the event, I believe what happened was against the law. So there are laws in Washington state that protect signature gatherers. I want to read from this RCW for you. It's RCW 29A.84.250, if you want to go read it yourself. And the pertinent portion is this: every person is guilty of a gross misdemeanor who interferes with or attempts to interfere with the right of any voter to sign or not to sign an initiative or referendum petition, or with the right to vote for or against an initiative or referendum measure by threats, intimidation, or any other corrupt means or practice. And when I read interferes with or attempts to interfere with, and then you look at by means of threats, intimidation, or any other corrupt means or practice, to me, intimidation is what was happening in Lakewood. The act of, again, holding up signs, calling people Nazis, shouting with a bullhorn, to act as if that would not intimidate a reasonable person from walking up and signing a referendum is ridiculous. Of course, that is intimidation. And this is not the first time, by the way, that something like this has happened. I would note, we're going to give an example of some other times that not just any old, if this were just some old wackadoos who showed up and did this, I would still feel strongly about it. But the problem is that this pushback to R101 is being fostered and endorsed by the Democratic Party. So when my event happened in Lakewood, one of the key people who was spreading information, telling people to come protest it, was a member of the local Democratic Party there. And the same is true for what led to counter-protesters to show up in Lakewood. The Pierce County Democrats put out this sort of flyer about a couple issues to their members. But one of the other ones said, we've been informed that Mothers for Liberty, M4L, may be at the JBLM Freedom Fest this weekend. Their purpose is to obtain signatures supporting R101 entitled Protect Parents' Rights and Kids' Safety. This bill specifically targets children's health care. They go on to say, if you believe Mothers for Liberty should not be permitted to use a federal event to obtain signatures in support of Referendum 101, please call the base legal office. And then it says, if no one answers, please leave a message. And then they go on to say that a captain at the base, told them that Mothers for Liberty would not be permitted to collect signatures there. And so, the Democratic Party in Pierce County said, if you see any Mothers for Liberty requesting signatures, please take a photo of them and send it in. Again, if you're someone trying to collect signatures for a lawful referendum, which is a right of voters in this state, and you have people blowing bullhorns, calling you, shouting about Nazis and fascists, if you have people taking your pictures to send it to the military, that's not intimidation. And again, this is not the first time the Democratic Party in Washington state has done something like this. You'll probably recall, because we talked about it on the podcast, when Initiative 1929 was in full swing, which would have repealed the capital gains tax, the then chair of the Washington State Democratic Party, Tina Podlodowski, encouraged people to write into or text into a tip line, a hotline, to let a group called Invest in Law Now know where signature gathering was taking place. Tina Podlodowski said at the time, friends don't let friends sign petitions that give billionaires tax cuts and bankrupt our schools, Wash Dems. Seven rich white dudes are paying for this initiative to get richer. Decline to sign, call the hotline. And again, it says, new hotline, let us know if you see an I-1929 signature gatherer in Washington state. So again, it was a snitch line to say, take a picture, text in a location of where people are daring to exercise their rights as voters of Washington state to put something on the ballot. their right as voters of Washington State to support a referendum to repeal a law that has already been signed. So I am calling today, and this is not hyperbole, I think the Secretary of State's office should investigate these coordinated efforts by the state Democratic Party, by local county Democratic parties, to interfere in the democratic process. They cannot, by law, intimidate people from collecting signatures. They cannot, by law, intimidate voters from signing a referendum, from signing an initiative. If Republicans were engaged in this exact same behavior, do you think that it would be swept under the rug? It wouldn't. And I would ask them, why are you so scared? What are you so scared of? Why are you so freaked out by the prospect of Washington voters weighing in on a law that you go to these extremes? And again, if it were just private citizens who took it upon themselves to write up signs calling people Nazis and blowing a bullhorn, that's one thing. This is the state Democratic Party who has supported these efforts in the past. In the case of the event over the weekend in Lakewood, it was the county Democratic Party, the Pierce County Democratic Party. And again, when I was in Lacey, it was local Democratic people who work for the county party there who were circulating the flyers calling me anti-transgender and encouraging people to show up. Yes, you have a First Amendment right to make your voice heard and to dissent on the collection of signatures for Referendum 101. You do not have a right under the law to intimidate people against signing it or to intimidate signature gatherers. That's exactly what you've done. So I will today be sending a letter to the Secretary of State encouraging him, if he is truly nonpartisan, to look into these actions by the state Democratic Party and by county Democratic parties. This would never fly if Republicans were doing it. And we have to be morally consistent. So I'll update you and let you know if I hear back on my letter. But again, you know, if R101 falls short of 200,000 signatures, which it could, I don't know, you know, we have a couple days left, then I think this takes on a new level of seriousness. Because if this has happened in these two instances that we know of, I have to wonder where else this has happened, where signature gatherers or people who would sign have been intimidated against doing so. That is anti-democratic. All right, Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal of our state is under fire for alleged anti-Semitic remarks. So she was at an event, she was on this panel, and, you know, topic of Israel and Palestine, and there were some pro-Palestine protesters in the room who were interrupting the event and interrupting another panelist from speaking. So Congresswoman Jayapal, again, she's a chair of the Progressive Caucus. She's a congresswoman for the Seattle area, essentially. She stands up and I think makes an effort to kind of quell the crowd. But in doing so, she said something quite controversial. Here it is.
I'll just leave. Maybe I should just walk off.
Guys, can I say something? Can I say something as somebody that's been in the streets and has participated in a lot of demonstrations? I think I want you to know that we have been fighting to make it clear that Israel is a racist state, that the Palestinian people deserve self-determination and autonomy, that the dream of a two-state solution is slipping away from us, that it does not even feel possible.
So again, the comment that she's been criticized for is Israel is a racist state. So to their credit, House leadership put out a statement pretty quickly saying the opposite. It's a joint House Democratic leadership statement on the relationship between the United States and Israel. It starts by saying Israel is not a racist state. As a Jewish and democratic nation, Israel was founded 75 years ago on the principle of complete equality of social and political rights for all of its citizens, irrespective of religion, race, or sex, as codified in its Declaration of Independence. Now, I give them credit for coming out and saying that very clearly. They did not mention or condemn Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal in the statement, so I think it could have gone further to mention her specifically. They did not do that, but I do give them credit for immediately countering the comments of someone of their own political party. For her part, because this took off really quick, and there was a lot of anger on both sides, frankly, about what the congresswoman said. So she puts out this lengthy statement. I'm not going to read the whole thing for you, but I'll read the first part of it. She said, at a conference, I attempted to defuse a tense situation during a panel where fellow members of Congress were being protested. Words do matter, and so it's important that I clarify my statement. I do not believe the idea of Israel as a nation is racist. I do, however, believe that Netanyahu's extreme right-wing government has enraged or has engaged in discriminatory and outright racist policies, da-da-da. So she basically, I mean, it's not an apology. She certainly didn't apologize. And she wrote this long statement that, to me, you know, just furthers the comment that she made that she's now under fire for. So I reached out to our friend Ari Hoffman. He's like, thanks for thinking of me. I'm like, Ari, you're one of the only Jewish radio hosts that I know. So I had to have him come in from his, he talks a lot about these issues, and I wanted to have him on to sort of try to paint a clear picture of why people on both sides, frankly, are so upset by the congresswoman's remarks. And so Ari Hoffman with KVI was nice enough to chat with us about that very issue. Ari Hoffman, welcome back to Undivided.
Always a pleasure, Brandy. How you doing?
I'm doing well. So explain to people why it is so problematic and divisive for a member of Congress to say what the congresswoman said.
So there's no problem with anybody criticizing another government. We do it all the time. What do you and I do for a living? We criticize our own government, right? There's nothing wrong with that. The problem is when you make falsehoods, when you make comparisons that just aren't there. So, for example, Pramila Jayapal, her parents are from Malaysia. She's from India, Singapore, and a few other countries. I looked up the human rights records of all those countries. And then I looked up her Twitter account, and I never hear her say anything about the fact that those countries have enormous human rights abuses. But yet her Twitter account is filled with anti-Israel rhetoric, things that aren't even true. If you want to criticize something, criticize things that are true. Instead, she just makes stuff up. And then the worst part is in this non-apology she issued. What does she do? She tries to defend what she said by comparing it to the Holocaust. Lady, stay in your lane, okay? What happened with the Palestinians and the Israelis is nothing compared to 6 million Jews being shoved into ovens in concentration camps. You want to draw a comparison with that? How about we talk about the Uyghur Muslims? How about we talk about what's going on in China? But she doesn't talk about that. She is single focused on the Jewish state of Israel. And let's remember, there's only one Jewish state in the entire world. It's the size of New Jersey. It has 7 million people living there. It has Jews and Arabs living side by side, Christians living side by side. You have Arabs can vote. Arabs can serve in the IDF. Arabs are in the Knesset, which is their version of Congress. Arabs are Supreme Court justices. So to say it's a racist country is beyond ridiculous.
What do you think drives those comments that a lot of people would consider anti-Semitic? Is it anti-Semitism or is it something political?
I think it's both. I think it's really both at this point. I mean, you hear Pramila Jayapal regularly bash on Israel, Cori Bush, AOC, Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, all of them. It's constant. And then they say, oh, we're not anti-Semitic. Well, all you're doing is spewing this anti-Semitic garbage. If I spent all day on my radio show spewing things against any minority group, what would they say about me? I don't do that. This is what they do nonstop. But on top of that, it's an easy political punching bag for them. It wins them points with the far, far left who are very, very anti-Israel. And they can't wrap their heads around Israel, a country where they want it to be this human rights violator. It seems like they want it to be that. It doesn't seem like they want to fix it. And yet this is a country where LGBTQ+IA have all the rights under the sun. They have pride parades in Tel Aviv. They have them in the area surrounding Jerusalem. And yet they're going after Israel on a regular basis. At what point do you say, okay, it's not just rhetoric. This is actually how they feel.
Do you give credit to House leadership for putting out a statement pretty quickly and taking a position against what she said?
Yes and no. So they didn't call her out by name in their thing. They didn't say that. And this seems like a repeat of what happened with Nancy Pelosi and Ilhan Omar. Don't forget when Ilhan Omar made those comments, it's all about the Benjamins, referencing Jews and money. They didn't actually condemn her. What they did was they did this nothing statement, and then they passed this nothing resolution, which condemned all different kinds and forms of hate and left out a whole bunch of others in the process. So it's nice that they're trying, but at the same time, the Democrats know they have a hard, hard problem with their hard left flank, where you're seeing more and more of this anti-Semitic, anti-Israel rhetoric coming from the progressive left.
You know, I'll end here. Congresswoman Jayapal, she put out this lengthy, and I don't see it as an apology. I mean, it was sort of just reinforcing the position of what she said. Do you think that what she said was simply her trying to quell the crowd? Or do you think that she said exactly what she believes?
You and I do a lot of speaking engagements, Brandy. You know, sometimes you can do that one-liner where you get the applause, you get the cheering, you get the support. I mean, you and I did that forum a while back, which was for, I believe, the Washington Republicans. I knew there were two or three lines I could say there that would get everybody cheering. You know that when you speak at these events. She said what she knew would get the applause. That's what she did. She's got a whole bunch of anti-Israel, pro-Palestinian activists. If you say Israel's a racist state, you're going to get the applause, whether it's true, whether it's untrue. And that's exactly what she did.
Yeah. Is there anything she can do in your mind to make up for it?
Look at her Twitter account. Look at her social media. This is not a one-off incident. This is who she is. I don't know how you come back from this. And I got to say, I know that synagogues in her district right now, because the majority of synagogues in Seattle are in her district, are right now working out condemnations and a few other things going on. I don't know how she really comes back from this with the Jewish community, but unfortunately, the Jewish community is so fractured that a large amount of the Jews are actually on the progressive side, and they're going to say, yeah, okay, we're with you no matter what you say.
All right, Ari Hoffman, host of The Ari Hoffman Show on 570 KVI. We appreciate it as always.
Always a pleasure, Brandy.
Yeah, good to get Ari's insight on that issue. So we'll see what continued fallout there is for Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal. But I will say there is a little unity among a big chunk of the Democratic Party and, of course, among Republicans coming out against what she said and the damaging nature of it and the simply untrue nature of it. So, all right, coming up next, we're going to bring in our little guest for the day. Not now. Next. Don't get too antsy over there, special guest. But first, I've been talking about our friends over at First Mark Insurance. Mike and I took the First Mark Challenge a few months ago now, and we're just loving the service that we get and our new insurance, for that matter. I was telling Nicole the other day, I got a refund check for my auto insurance for the first time in my life. So now I have adult insurance. It's awesome. But the First Mark Challenge, I think, is one, a good opportunity to try to save a little bit of money right now, especially with the increased gas prices and the long-term care tax, which we're going to talk about coming up in a little bit. So basically what you do with the First Mark Challenge is you just schedule some time to meet with them virtually if you want. Go through all your current insurance, talk about your insurance needs. They'll go out, they'll shop the marketplace for you, and they'll come back and tell you, hey, here's what we think you ought to do. It doesn't cost anything. For Mike and I, we found out that we were dramatically underinsured, and that being underinsured can be really dangerous when it comes to everything that you've worked for. Here is Dave Taylor. He's the CEO of First Mark.
So the risk is, if you get in an auto accident and you don't have enough coverage, you get in an auto accident that's your fault, and you don't have enough coverage, then they can come after you personally for any additional amounts over and above your coverage limit. And that means things like your retirement plan, or come after your equity in your home, or garnish your wages. So it's a big thing. And like with you and Mike, I just think most people haven't had someone take the time to explain it to them in terms they can understand, and show them the how inexpensive it is to actually get the correct coverage.
Yeah, and I think that's the big thing, is like, you're probably like, well, gosh, you guys had to get much better insurance and all of a sudden it's costing more money. No, we got much better insurance for the same price, and we don't pay First Mark anything. So to me, it's just such a no-brainer. And I enjoyed chatting with a few of you who have taken the First Mark Challenge during our meet and greets across the state. It really is either you're going to save money and get just as good insurance, or he might come back and say, hey, your insurance is great. You don't need to change it at all. And then it's like, what'd you lose? So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Take the First Mark Challenge. First Mark Insurance, they work for you. All right, coming up momentarily, we're going to talk about an effort underway to make the long-term care tax optional. Really not controversial stuff. But first, you guys know Nicole's in Vegas. She just abandoned us to go drink at the pool. So Daryl Davis is making his undivided debut.
Hello. How's it going, everybody?
Hi, Daryl.
Hi.
You know, people might not know this. We've been friends longer than Nicole and I have been friends.
A long time.
A long time.
You came to my ship in Japan.
Yeah, so Daryl was my best friend from college was in the Navy stationed outside of Tokyo, and you and him were Navy buddies.
Yep.
So I'd come visit my best friend, and then I made new friends.
Oh, yeah.
And here we are.
All these years later, over 10 years, I think.
Oh, yeah, it's been more than 10 years. Yeah. Like, I think I've been friends with Nicole for about a decade. So I've been friends with you longer. And it's just so funny how things work out, because you know, got into tech stuff and after the Navy, and then you're so good at this kind of stuff. So I was like, hey, can you help me with my little podcast? You're like, sure. And you've just taken us so much further. We couldn't do the live show without, we couldn't do basically anything without you.
Well, I'm happy to be a part of the team. And you and Nicole, you know, I gave you the tools and you guys ran with it.
You know, what can I say?
Yeah.
I'm excited to get your opinion on some things later in comments.
Okay. I must first say that every opinion that I give is my opinion own and does not represent anybody that I work for.
Okay, good. Oh, that was really good.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, Daryl, it's nice to have you. You're doing just a bang up job so far.
I hope that the cuts are nice and clean.
Yeah.
And
everything's good. I mean, I was laughing because before Nicole left, she was going over all this with you. And I'm like, wait, didn't you teach her?
Nicole was mansplaining to me how to use this. I taught her how to use it.
Yeah, you taught her, and then she's going to teach you before she leaves for Vegas.
That's all right. She takes ownership of it, and that's what I love.
Yeah, so it's good. Okay, so Daryl Davis is here. So make sure you say hi to Daryl Davis in the live chat, and we'll bring him back later on for comments. Okay, the following segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Today and tomorrow, we're going to be talking about the new long-term care tax. If you have not already, you will soon see that coming out of your paycheck because it began at the beginning of July. So depending on how often you get paid, you probably have already seen it as a line item, and now you're poorer than you were because it's taking out, I think, 58 cents for every $100 you make in payroll deductions, so that maybe at a later point in life, you might benefit from the long-term care payout, which there's just so many issues of it, not to mention, you know, is it even solvent? But people weren't able to opt out of it. There was a really small window for opting out of it for people who either already had their own long-term care or they were planning to retire out of state, and so then they wouldn't even be able to cash in on the benefit. There's just a slew of issues. So today and tomorrow, we're going to be talking about how do we get out of this mess, okay? There's a couple options. You can maybe have an initiative of a people, which we're going to talk about that tomorrow, because there actually is an initiative right now to make the long-term care tax optional. Or you can have lawmakers who come back next session and realize, hey, this thing is deeply unpopular. It is an absolute disaster. So maybe we should go back and fix it, repeal it, or make it optional. So I invited Senate Minority Leader John Braun, the ranking Republican in the state Senate, on to talk about what they might do legislatively to, like I said, get us out of this mess. Senator John Braun, thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me, Brandy. Always good to be on.
I think we can agree that this long-term care tax is deeply unpopular. Is that fair?
I think you can safely say that. And it kind of escaped from folks' consciousness there for a while. But now that they realize it didn't go away permanently, it's back and it's showing up, you know, this week or next week in their paychecks, people are pretty upset about it.
Yeah. What do you think are the fatal flaws of this program?
Well, I mean, the math just doesn't work. And I've said all along, look, this is a real problem. We ought to be thinking about how we prepare for long-term care expenses, both individually and as a state. We ought to have, ways to make reasonable preparations. But, so that the idea that they had an idea to solve this and they ran it out and they tried it, they get credit for that. But at some point, it became very clear, look, the benefit isn't nearly enough to address the issue. It's expensive for people. A lot of people can't use it because they leave the state or for any number of reasons. It just doesn't mathematically work well. When you get to a situation like that, there's no harm done if you just say, hey, look, it's still a problem. We should still keep trying, but this solution doesn't work. Let's set it aside and try something different. Had they done that, I think we'd all be on the same page. We'd all be saying, let's try and solve this problem, but they won't. They're like, nope, we have a small group of elite Democratic lawmakers who say, we know best and we don't care what it does to you or your pocketbook or your long-term care prospects.
Yeah, well, you say, you know, there is no harm done if you just say, hey, tried that, didn't work. But there is harm done to people's political egos and their ideology. And I think that's what we need to sort of get past. So before we talk about what can be done from a legislative perspective next session, given the fact that this would require any changes in the legislature would require a good number of Democrats to admit that, hey, this policy that we pushed did not work. Do you think there's an appetite or enough pressure for them to walk away from it?
I would put it this way. I think if it was a pure, democracy and you put a better proposal in front of folks and they said, you got to vote on this, yes or no, I think a better solution would find a way. The challenge we see in Olympia, and frankly, you know, it's just the way our government runs, is a, you know, a small group of very progressive lawmakers can control that caucus and keep reasonable solutions from coming to a vote. And that's what we're standing in the way right now. I don't think today, this is just my speculation, I don't think today this bill they've passed, it's an absolute disaster, would pass the, you know, pass the Senate today. I don't think it'd have the votes. I think you could get one, a better solution passed if it could get to the floor, but that's the challenge. We have a small group of elite elected Democrats who want to stand in the way of really solving this problem.
Yeah. So talk about what Republicans would do to either fix it or to reverse it. What are you guys planning?
Well, I think the first step is to stop it and say, look, this doesn't work. And so that would be either a repeal. We could delay it indefinitely. How you do it, it doesn't matter. You saw, you know, many of us supported the delay because it was at least a step in the right direction, even if it didn't solve the problem. So I think the first step is to step back and say, this isn't working. Let's stop hurting people's pocketbooks. Let's stop making Washington less affordable and rethink this. There are a couple ideas out there. I have an idea that just says, okay, you're not willing to admit this is a failed program. Let's at least make it optional for folks. And that's what a bill that I have does. That's what the initiative that's been proposed does. And we'll let the people vote. They're smart, capable people in our state. They can decide whether it's worth it or not. Once you get past that, though, and you have to figure out what next, I personally think, you know, there's a private market that was robust, that did address the issue. And some make the argument that policies were too expensive. That is true, but that's really only true for the platinum plans, the ones that really gave you everything. If you want something that, frankly, exceeds, you know, is more modest, but exceeds the current, you know, proposal, you can do that at less cost based on private insurance. And we can reinforce that. You know, Representative Stokesbury had a proposal 2 years ago that says, okay, let's rebuild the private market by providing some level, reasonable level of underwriting to that plan to help bring the cost down a little bit more. I think we'd be open to that. Something that relies on a broader market, a more thoughtful market, folks who do this for a living and do it well and get the state out of this business.
Yeah, because, I mean, and you've mentioned a couple times, so I should just note for people who don't know, the lifetime benefit is, what, $36,500? That's the max anybody will ever benefit from this program. And if you've ever had to use long-term care for a loved one, that's like 3 months worth of, it's like 3 months worth of care, essentially. Is that a wrong interpretation around that?
That's exactly the right number, $36,500. But it actually gets worse than that for a couple of reasons. One, I believe the maximum distribution is $1,000 per month. So you couldn't pay your bill from the very first month. And on top of that, that was the number that was put in place in 2019 when this was voted on by the Democratic majority in both the House and the Senate and the state legislature. That number hasn't changed in spite of about 20-25% inflation since then. It's not going to change until we, you know, start paying this if it goes forward in 2026. So it's going to be even lower number effectively due to inflation because of the time period to put all this in effect. This is not solving the problem. This is not getting after people's real needs when it comes to long-term care.
Yeah. So, Senator, if this coming legislative session, I know it's a bit away, but this is an important issue people are thinking about right now. If Republicans introduced a bill that would make the long-term care program optional, do you feel that you could get some Democratic co-sponsors?
I do. I mean, I think there's at least a few that are out there that say, hey, this is privately and many and some, it's a some publicly say this clearly isn't working. They're hearing from their constituents, you know, from every corner of the state that this is not a good policy. I think we get some. The question is whether we can get enough to actually get it through the process to a vote on the floor. And that is a much more difficult problem. But pressure is growing. I mean, here we are only, you know, this started up again on the first of this month. The volume from constituents across the state is getting louder each day. They're very frustrated with this program. So I think it's possible. I mean, at the very least, that's our job. We got to go try. You know, we ought to propose better ideas, more thoughtful ideas that reflect the wishes of the people of the state of Washington.
Yeah, and I'll end with this. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to talk about this from the perspective of the initiative that's been proposed. You know, is that a better way to go about it? If this came to the legislature via an initiative to the legislature, does that make it more likely, you think, that your Democratic colleagues would be willing to support it or no change?
I think it helps. I think that now they know that if they don't do something, I mean, initiative to the legislature is a little bit complicated because, you know, you have a couple options. You can, the legislature could do nothing, in which case it goes to a vote of the people the following fall. We could just approve it, in which case it just becomes law, or you can offer an alternative, which has only happened a few times in recent, you know, the last few decades. And every time it's been very confusing for the voters because you got to vote, you know, if you, you know, it's just a very complicated process to vote on. But nonetheless, this reflects a position of that something is going to happen. Either the state legislature got to do something or it's going to go to the vote of the people. And I think people recognize, folks who support this policy recognize that this goes to a vote of the people. It gets repealed. I don't think there's any question about it. So I think there's a better chance we get something done, that we really have a meaningful conversation. If you really want to solve this problem, it needs to be a thoughtful, meaningful, bipartisan effort to get it to stick long term.
I agree 100%. And hey, 2024 is an election year, so maybe they'll be compelled in an election year to do what's popular among voters. So, Senator John Braun, yeah, we appreciate you taking the time.
All right, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we appreciate his insight on that. And like he said, I agree with his assessment that if this, a repeal or making it optional, makes it to voters, voters will choose to make it optional. There has been public polling done on this. Public opinion is very much on the side of if this is going to be a program, it needs to be an optional program. And so in that sense, I find it more likely that Democrats might be on board this coming legislative session with doing something, but we cannot rely on that, which is why even 6 months out from the next legislative session, we're talking to Senator John Braun. We're having these conversations. How can we undo this? It's deeply unpopular. The program is an absolute disaster. At the very least, it to be optional for Washingtonians. So also, as I mentioned, they're coming up on the show tomorrow. We're going to look at this from the other perspective, and that is via initiative. Brian Haywood is going to join us. He's running an initiative that would make the long-term care tax optional, as well as a slew of other common sense initiatives. So we'll have that interview for you on the show tomorrow. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Okay, let's get to our segment, Unflippin' Believable. Boop. I don't know how many times I have had to remind folks in Seattle about the positions that their council members took just a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago. It's easy to forget these things when those particular council members are trying so hard to gaslight voters, trying so hard to rewrite history. One of them is Councilman Dan Strauss, who is only one of just a couple council members who are actually running for their seats again. He represents the Magnolia, Ballard area of Seattle. He has this flyer. Oh, for the love, help me. It says, defund the police was a mistake. Okay, I agree with him up to that point. Got it, nailed it. And then he goes on to say, I voted time and time again to fund the police. Oh, you don't say. And I'm actively working with Mayor Harrell to improve the department. Gas lighting to the extreme. First of all, any council member who's ever voted on a budget has technically voted to fund the police. Dan Strauss was in support of police defunding. He was one of the council members in the summer of 2020 who pledged to defund the police department by 50%. He was one of the council members who was up in the autonomous zone known as CHOP, outside an area that was taken over that included a police precinct, supporting the efforts there. He is one of the council members who is directly to blame for the exodus of officers that has led to a staffing crisis on the Seattle Police Department. And what makes that position even more egregious that he had in 2020, that he had in 2021, and that he's now trying to completely back away from, oh, defund the police was a mistake. What makes it even more egregious is the last time he was running for his job in 2019, he, along with several other council members who would later be pro-defunding, explicitly campaigned for their jobs in 2019 on the promise, on the pledge to hire more officers and do everything we could to keep the officers we already had. Here it is.
We need to fulfill our commitment to the public to grow the size of our police department.
We are going to also need to make sure that we staff our police force correctly, and that means retaining more police officers. We've got some of the best trained police officers in our state.
We need to hire more police officers in the city. I see on a daily basis that there's parts of our city where we don't have the staffing numbers to have effective community policing strategies and deter the kinds of crimes of opportunity that are prolific.
Yeah, we have the receipts. That clip in particular is you hear from Lisa Herbold, who thank the Lord in heaven is not running for her seat again, so we can forget about that train wreck. And then you heard from Dan Strauss. And then you heard from Councilman Andrew Lewis, who is running for his seat again. He wants to represent downtown. So here you have two guys running for their seats again. Dan Strauss, Andrew Lewis, campaigned on the promise to hire more police officers. Oh, we love the police. The police we have are some of the best trained of any agency in the state and in the nation. We just applaud them. They do such great work. 6 months after that clip, they turned around under public pressure from a small vocal minority. And they said, oh, we're going to defund the police by 50%. We pledged to do that. Police are awful and they're racist and they're terrible human beings. And then when that went sideways, and then when public opinion shifted again away from the defund the police movement, all of a sudden you have Andrew Lewis and Dan Strauss who are like, we love the police again. We need more police. We need to keep the police we already have. You have to believe who they say they are, who they've shown you to be. They blow with the wind. The only side they care about is the side that they believe is the side that has public opinion at any given moment in time. When it comes to Dan Strauss's flyer, there is only one version of that flyer that I would have accepted. And it is a version of that flyer that says, defund the police was a mistake, followed immediately by, and I'm sorry. I fixed it for you, Dan Strauss. I am okay with any politician, any council member, going away from a position that they previously held, as long as they do not try to gaslight voters in the process. If Dan Strauss came out and he had this flyer and it says, defund the police was a mistake, I am so sorry that I supported that, here's why I changed my mind, here's why I was wrong, I wouldn't be mad at Dan Strauss for that. I wouldn't be mad at Andrew Lewis for that. But they are actively trying to rewrite history because they want to keep their jobs. And for Seattle voters, we'll talk about it at the end of the show today. Your ballots came in the mail this weekend. I highly, highly suggest you remember what those two council members have said and done in the past and compare that to their words now. Do their words now match their actions in the past? And in many, many instances, they do not. And Seattle is not in a position to be able to continue to have council members who blow with the wind and bend to the loudest voices in the room. It is frankly unbelievable. All right, coming up next, we'll get to questions and comments from the stream today. But first, we've been talking about our friend Wes Jones, a great real estate agent in our area. You can check him out at sellwithwes.com. He and his team, his dad was a builder. And so he has this awesome background that they've segued into a cool program called the Listing Boost Concierge Service, where if you're going to sell your home and you're like, man, I got updates that I need to do, but I can't take on those projects, or I don't have the money to take on those projects. Wes Jones loves projects. Wes Jones and his team can take all of that over for you. They can even help pay for it up front. He came into the studio and spoke about the Listing Boost Concierge Service.
So we're going to come in, number one, and we're going to inspect a home, do a pre-inspection, and we're going to find out all those little hidden bugs that, you know, a buyer may be concerned with. And if a seller wants to do some cosmetic updates, you know, whether it's flooring, whether it's lighting, countertops, even a kitchen, we're going to help guide them through that. So the Listing Boost Concierge Service, what we can do is we can project manage those rehab projects. We have a list of contractors and preferred vendors that we like to work with and have a ton of experience with. And we'll take that off a seller's hands. We'll go ahead and run that project for them. And we even have some options where they can pay at closing out of their net proceeds.
Yeah, really cool. A side note, I was on the West Jones social media pages over the weekend. Man, they have this listing right now that's like this beautiful log home out on a bunch of acreage. So nice. You go check it out. I was like, I should tell Mike to look at it. Maybe Mike, I can convince him to move. All right, sellwithwest.com. Sellwithwest.com, a better way to sell your home. Okay, Daryl, you want to come back in for some questions and comments? Because I have some questions and comments that are directed at you.
Okay.
Somebody wants to know. Let me find it. Todd, what did Daryl do in the Navy?
Yeah, so I was an interior communications electrician, IC. I got out. I was only in for 4 years. I got out IC3, so that's interior communications electrician, petty officer, third class, surface warfare, air warfare specialist.
Wow, and you were on a aircraft carrier.
Yep.
Which
aircraft
one?
CVN-73, the George Washington.
Yeah, I have pictures of us on it.
And the 76, the Ronald Reagan.
I should have pulled pictures of, like,
oh, yeah, we should.
We young Daryl and Brandy in Japan for tomorrow's show.
I had a head full of hair, too.
You did, yeah, for tomorrow's show. Patient complaint says, a fellow sailor, battleship sailor here. Bryce Anchetta Real Estate says, if Nicole is gone, does that mean Brandy can swear? I think maybe Sundays with Subscribers should be the swear-approved show.
It's Sunday. It's the Lord's Day. No.
It's the Lord's Day. Yeah, no, I don't think Mike would care which show it is. Yeah, doesn't like my potty
Sunday,
mouth.
I think.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I don't know. But no, Nicole is probably watching.
Yes, she is.
Because I got to be honest, Daryl's doing a pretty good job, and that's probably freaking her out. She's probably on the first flight back from Vegas right now. Like, she's left the pool. She's like, Daryl's doing too good of a job.
Oh, my goodness.
I can't let him succeed.
Your job's safe, Nicole.
Okay. All right. On Referendum 101, do you think, Daryl, if you were going to sign Referendum 101 and you showed up and those were the signs and stuff and the bullhorn, would you still sign it?
I'd still sign it because I'm stronger than all of them.
We were getting ready for the show and Daryl was disappearing into the other room. And I was like, what are you doing? He's in there doing push-ups.
I just do push-ups.
Just, you know.
It keeps
getting
the
energy
away.
Out. He was thinking about those counter-protesters. Show them. So Kyle said, to be totally honest, yeah, it would affect my signing then and there. I'd find a way to sign elsewhere. But in 2023, who knows what will go viral or get sent to your employer or context notwithstanding. That's very true.
That is true.
Like, I wouldn't put it past someone to. And again, they're actively saying, like, take pictures.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, okay, I don't want to get my picture taken signing what has turned into a controversial bill so I can be called anti-trans and they can try to get me fired at work.
Yeah.
Sarah said, I'd still sign. The fact that those people had to resort to intimidation validates my belief that we're doing the right thing to get this on the ballot. Megan said something that I'll have to double check on. I don't doubt it, but it's really interesting. You said at Kent Cornucopia Days, which I think was over the weekend, there was a Republican booth collecting signatures for R101. Kent Lyons, who sponsored the event, told the Republicans to pack up and leave.
Oh, wow.
I got to look into that. So, yeah. I mean, if it's a private event, you have every right to tell someone you can't be here collecting signatures. And
that's
maybe
true.
It's their policy to say nothing outwardly political. I don't have an issue with that as long as it's not like we're going to pick and choose and, you know, Democratic initiatives or referendums. The thing is that Democrats are in control. So the likelihood of there being a Democrat-led referendum is zero.
Yeah.
Like, what are you going to try to repeal? Right? What are you going to try to, something Democrats did?
Yeah.
And the same with initiatives. Like, if Democratic voters in our state really want something, the chances are Democrats are already doing it or have already done it.
Yeah.
And so I find it really concerning that you have this party that's like, oh, democracy is in peril, da-da-da. Trying to stop voters from doing something they have a right to do.
Yeah.
They have a right in this state of referendum.
Everybody should have a chance to vote.
Right.
We didn't vote in the Senate Bill 5599.
Right.
Granted, the people who we appointed voted it in, but we the people did not explicitly vote for this. So I feel like whether you're against it or for it, putting it up to the voters, I feel like that's just democracy.
It should be non-controversial. And actually, I've had some people sign the referendum who said they weren't sure how they'd vote, but they did not have an issue giving it to voters to decide on, which I think is a really common sense thing in position. So, and I was asked by some people, are you really going to file an official complaint? I am. I am going to file a complaint because I think it's against the law. Now, police were there at this event in Lakewood, and they were trying to sort of, you know, keep the peace a little bit. But according to this report from Jonathan Cho, when the police would leave, things would get bad again. Right. So again, we're talking about intimidation, and who gets to decide whether these people were intimidated? If you're there and you're like, yeah, that intimidated me.
Yeah.
I feel like you should file a police report on it.
I mean, as a whole, I feel like if you see a mob of people, just your normal natural instinct is not to go towards.
It's like, okay, I'm going to, I'll find a different place.
I don't know what's
to
going on over here, but I don't want any.
Yeah, there's signs saying Nazi and stuff. And yeah. I'm like, no thanks.
That's hard because, you know, First Amendment, everybody should be able to say what they want to say.
Right.
But you shouldn't interfere with people expressing their right to vote.
Right. And the law does allow for you to try to make your case to someone about here's what why I don't think you should sign it.
Yeah.
But to intimidate them in that fashion, to me, violates the law, in my opinion. I mean, am I an attorney?
To the RCW, I mean.
No. Yeah. But I'm going to file a complaint. And I hope that our Secretary of State, who is a very moderate man, takes it seriously. Angry letter time. You know what? I'm going to write it by hand. Angry letter. All right. On the long-term care tax and this push to make it optional, which again, this is not divisive. Public polling says people are like, yeah, why would I not want that to be an optional thing? The concern is if you do make it optional again, that so many people will opt out that the program will be insolvent and there won't be enough money.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I like what John Braun said about, well, maybe we can try to have some government investment in the private sector so that you can almost provide some funds that can bring down the cost of private plans for people who otherwise wouldn't be able to afford them.
Right.
And those plans would still be better than the crappy one on under the long-term care program.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Sharon said, we opted out the first time around. Hope that still stands. Yes, it does. I get this question a lot. If you opted out and you got that letter from the state saying, yes, you have officially opted out, that is still valid. Hold on to it, but it's still valid. Unless you canceled your long-term care insurance, then that would be a problem. But if you kept it, hopefully you kept it and you still have the letter, then you're all good. Toby said, I squeaked into the long-term care exception period. Whew, what irks me is my young adult sons who have to pay into this flawed offering, weak care, no transferability. Yeah. And that's the other thing. It's like, wait, so I have to retire in Washington?
Yeah.
In order to get it.
It's crazy. And by the time I actually use that, what is it, like $35,000 or something?
Yeah.
That's probably just going to be one jab of insulin for me.
Oh, which is an indictment of the system, right? For sure. But yeah, it's like there's like a minimum or a maximum monthly payout, but it's like $36,000 spread over 36 months. You're still not going to get a lot for that. Much. And you should have an option to say, no, I'm retiring to Florida.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't have to pay into a program I will never benefit from. Yeah. They've made some efforts to fix some of those weird loopholes. But if a program is so flawed that you have to continually the next year come back, fix loopholes, they put it on some long pause. Mm-hmm. It's like, just make the whole thing optional. So again, we'll have another interview tomorrow on an initiative effort with that. All right. Thank you for your questions and comments. Daryl, good job today. Really neat. I mean, the show's not done yet.
Okay.
Don't screw it up.
I'm ending it. I'm ending the stream.
Don't end the stream. Okay. All right. Let us get to...
You like that? We have a soundboard. We just never use it. You guys
did
don't...
Did you?
It's there, always
play
been
that
there.
Again?
Yeah. We got... Yeah. You guys just don't use
what
it.
What are the sounds you got over there?
I got... There's an intro song, but it's a bit much.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who would have thought? Can you play that every time I say something funny? Which is frequently, because I'm hilarious. Oh my God, I love it. Okay. All right. Thank you, Daryl. So I mentioned a few moments ago that you should have your ballots in hand now for the primary election. Let's talk about it in our closing sanity check. Don't vote for crazy people. That's my sanity check for today. But in all seriousness, I think everyone's eyes are focused on the city of Seattle. It is a huge opportunity, this election, to put Seattle on a better path forward. 7 of 9 Seattle City Council seats are on the ballot. The vast majority of them do not have incumbents running. So no matter what, you're going to have a lot of new faces at Seattle City Hall in November. But new faces doesn't necessarily mean better faces or better politics, rather. Shama Sawant is going to be gone. Lisa Herbold is going to be gone. I mean, those are blessings. Those are absolute blessings to the city of Seattle that you have some of the worst ideologues who have voluntarily said, I'm not going to run again. Please, Seattle voters, do not replace them with other ideologues. In every race, there is at least one candidate that will value public safety, that will care about the success of businesses, big and small. Seattle needs fundamental change, and that takes a change in leadership at City Hall. So I really hope that Seattle voters, look, and I'll also say this, for those who have progressive values, the vast majority of candidates on the ballot have progressive values. It's just deciding between various shades of blue. But I would encourage you to really look at who is in this for the right reasons, who is going to look out for what's in the best interest of everyone in their district, not just a small, vocal, loud minority, and who's going to do what needs to be done to get the city back on track. Because we all want Seattle to be beautiful and vibrant and to live up to its full potential. If you don't live in Seattle, it's important for the success and the vitality of our entire state. So I beg you, in this sanity check, Seattle voters, to do the right thing and put people in office who truly deserve to be there. Oh, thanks, Daryl. Daryl reminded me that I need to close with an Eastside Weight Loss Clinic ad. Now, before I close with it, you laughed at my picture earlier.
Yeah.
All right, why don't you put it up?
Okay.
EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Why are you laughing?
Just look how happy you look.
On which side? The before or the after?
You look happier on the before.
I was eating well.
You were. We just wanted, we saw you walking around like that, and we just wanted you to be happy, Brandy.
Why didn't you say anything?
We just love happy Brandy.
Oh, my God.
But you're happy now.
For the record, I am much happier
now. You're much happier now.
And look, appearance isn't everything, but I was, like, clinically obese. Daryl's over there laughing off the mic. But in all seriousness, the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan has been great for me. I've lost 36 pounds. And it wasn't like about losing weight for me. It was about getting back to where I was. I mean, I gained a bunch of weight during the pandemic. The program was good because it was simple. It was really easy to stick to. And I didn't have to eat prepackaged meals or count calories. And so it's something I really feel like I can stick to for the rest of my life. So if you would like to do what I've done and what so many others have done, lose a little weight, feel better, not have your friends laugh at pictures of you anymore. I need to choose better friends, obviously. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan. Just takes 15 minutes to figure out if the program is right for you. And that has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. If you have not become a subscriber already, please do so. Just $5 a month. Think of all the things you can buy for $5. A coffee, a hot dog. What else, Daryl?
Some subscription streaming service.
No, that's not a good example.
Oh.
You can save the state of Washington for $5 a month.
Right, because you get a lot of content.
Give common sense a comeback.
Yeah, and UndividedPod.com.
Yes, UndividedPod.com. Daryl, you'll be back here tomorrow. Are you
sure? I'll be back here tomorrow.
Oh, good. Okay. All right, we'll see you guys back on the live show tomorrow at noon.
At noon.
Noon.